From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
It's not just the number of people in hospital beds, but new people showing up in the hospital with COVID-19. So this is very concerning to us, and it makes us take a pause here to evaluate these numbers. What we want to do most of all is make sure, is this a blip in the numbers? Is this a short surge that's taking place that will come back down? Or is this something that could have some sustaining features to it, in which case, obviously, we want to be extra careful.
That's Governor J.B. Pritzker warning that we are seeing what may be another surge when it comes to COVID-19, and that the state cannot move to what he calls the bridge phase for reopening the economy until the numbers look better. This comes as Illinois continues to get the vaccine into more people's arms. We'll discuss where we are with the pandemic and more. That's coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Emeritus Professor and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. He's also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us, Hannah Meisel, NPR Illinois State House Editor. And joining us today, we have Heather Sharon, a reporter for WTTW in Chicago Tonight. And Heather, it's always good to have you back with us.
I'm glad to be back, Sean.
Well, for the last few weeks, we've been seeing and hearing a lot of optimistic tones, more vaccines rolling out, numbers going in the right direction. Even the governor talked about that bridge phase for getting the economy fully reopened, and then not so fast. And Hannah, the news this week, the more I hear about it, it's not been so good. So kind of give us an update on where things stand.
That's right. I mean, we really had a very optimistic first few weeks of March. We were putting out vaccines a lot faster, more people were becoming eligible, but we have really hit this point where, we have a lot more hospitalizations and just more raw cases, and our percentage of our positivity rate of new COVID tests are unfortunately on the rise. And so when the governor announced this so-called bridge phase to normalcy, which would have allowed more capacity limits on things like retail and school events and stuff like that, this magic number was when we get 70% of Illinoisans 65 and over vaccinated, then we could get to the bridge phase. And then in the background was these other metrics saying, we have to have our hospitalization stable or continuing increase. But, in the last month, we have seen a 57% increase in new hospitalizations. And the overall number of people in the hospital with COVID has increased too. And so those two metrics have prevented us from going on to this bridge phase until, we see a slowdown, but we no indications quite yet that a slowdown is on the horizon.
Yeah, Charlie, we've discussed this before, maybe people getting a bit ahead of themselves when it comes to thinking, everything, the worst is behind us and we don't have to worry anymore, more people getting vaccinated. It is a process. And this past few weeks actually are showing that we're not quite there yet.
Yeah. And there was a comment from Dr. Emily Landon, who is a expert on this stuff. And she pointed out, it's sort of like the old story of the tortoise and the hare. The vaccines are the tortoise, and ultimately we know what the end result will be, but how far will a hare get ahead before that happens? And I think you look at a combination of factors. One, the nice weather, despite today's, near freezing temperatures, but the nice weather has encouraged people to get out and about. The fact that a lot of people have been vaccinated, more than 70% of the seniors in Illinois have been vaccinated, people are letting their guard down. And it was interesting because at least in Chicago, and Heather, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the increase in Chicago is mostly among young people, people ages 18 to 40, living on the north side. Whereas in the early days of the pandemic, the infections were most commonly among Black and Latino Chicagoans living on the south and west sides. And so in my mind, I wondered, of course, I'm an old guy, so I really don't know what goes through the minds of younger people these days. But I'm wondering if the people are finally deciding it's time to get out and start doing things. And we can forget about this this virus, because it's really not going to affect us that much. Young people get it and they survive. And we've already got our grandparents vaccinated, so we don't have to worry so much, which I think is probably a mistake. And we're at a stage now where if we don't take seriously the recommendations to wear a mask, to do the social distancing, to be aware of your surroundings, we could find ourselves with a fourth surge, which obviously nobody wants.
Now, Heather, we've been hearing this, that young people in many cases are ignoring some of these warnings. Is that what's going on in Chicago?
Well, it's hard to tell specifically sort of how and where people are getting sick, but Charlie's 100% right that this increase in cases is concentrated among white Chicagoans on the north side who are younger than 40 years old. And that's very different than the first two surges of the pandemic. And it really shows that we are living really in a new phase of this pandemic, what with vaccines and that increasing rollout. The issue is that it's really hard for officials like Mayor Lightfoot and Dr. Allison Arwady, the commissioner of the Chicago Department of Public Health, to warn people about this surge in cases while at the same time celebrating the reopening of Chicago's baseball stadiums and allowing indoor dining to resume and then expand. So it's really difficult to tell young people on one hand, go ahead, go to a restaurant, go to a bar, but on the other hand, to remind them that the pandemic has not ended and that they are still in danger of getting sick. And I always remind people that it's not a binary issue of whether you get COVID and then you die or don't die. There are many, many cases of young people who have become very seriously ill, who eventually recover, but have been sick with very serious symptoms for months and months. So it is potentially a really serious situation that right now is being fueled by more transmissible variants and a still slow vaccine rollout, especially in Chicago and Cook County.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because being downstate here in Springfield, I would say if you want to get a vaccine and you're eligible to get a vaccine, you can get one. It's not been that hard. A lot of appointments being made. People are getting those on a regular basis. And I think that's the case in a lot of different parts of Illinois. But when you get closer to the Chicago area, things are a lot different. Can you kind of give us, from a downstate perspective, the current situation, then update on what's going on in the Chicago region when it comes to vaccines?
Well, it's still very difficult to get a vaccine appointment. And we're talking on Friday morning, and at about 9:15, the city opened the first appointments at the mass vaccination site that will open near Wrigley Field and one at Chicago State University on the south side. And all of those appointments, and I assume there were thousands available at one point, were gone within 15-30 minutes. And I think that shows you the level of demand for the vaccine in Chicago. It seems as if there are more appointments available through pharmacies than there have been in recent weeks right now. So I've been encouraging people to try their luck there, but it's still very, very much a Hunger Games situation. And I think we're very quickly approaching a situation where we're gonna see some tension start to boil over between Mayor Lightfoot and Governor Pritzker, because Governor Pritzker has basically called on the mayor to make everybody in Chicago eligible for the vaccine, as he said he will do on April 12th, just 10 days away from today in all of Illinois, while the mayor has said that would create even more chaos and even more make it even more difficult to get Black and Latino Chicagoans who remain still at greatest risk for severe COVID and death, getting them vaccinated. So that there is a flashpoint approaching there, especially especially if that supply imbalance continues between northeastern Illinois and the rest of the state. And it's complicated by the fact that Chicago gets its own allocation of vaccines from the federal government while the state covers everywhere else. And that, you know, there's going to be a lot of pressure on both the governor and the mayor to sort of figure out how to better balance those allocations.
I want to read a quote from the governor this week. Kind of chiding Mayor Lightfoot. He says, I'm concerned, I'll be honest with you, that the city of Chicago seems to want to delay beyond April 12th in terms of opening up to everybody, when he's referring to making vaccines available to everyone 16 and over. And so we've seen this dynamic play out over and over and over again in the last year between the mayor and the governor. Their staffs can't seem to get on the same page, but Heather is correct when, you know, pointing out that Chicago gets its own federal allocation and Chicago can't really, you know, they can advocate for more doses of vaccine, but they can't, you know, control the fact that the federal government is going to, you know, keep doing what it does in terms of how much it's going to give. And so we do have this imbalance. You know, that quote was very cutting, and I'm sure that it upset the mayor's office hearing that.
Charlie, the governors of the past don't always get along with the mayors of the past of Chicago, at least. And does this have a possibility of making their working relationship even more strained as this goes forward, this one issue?
Oh, I think it'll be uncomfortable, but I don't think it's going to be any major breach because they're basically on the same page on all the big issues. The problems with the vaccine, the fact that Chicago's rules are a little different than Illinois', I see that as kind of a minor blip on the radar screen. There's a lot of more pressing issues for the mayor and for the governor than to try and have some kind of a ongoing feud over the coronavirus restrictions. And as a matter of fact, people from Chicago can go outside the city and get a vaccine. We've had people come down here to the state fairgrounds where there's vaccines, and the appointments are, I think, generally available. And they don't ask you, where do you live? If you're from Chicago and you come to the fairgrounds, we'll stick you in the arm. Or if you're from Carbondale and come to the fairgrounds, we'll stick you in the arm. So there's that opportunity for people who have the means for transportation. And I think one of the things about Chicago that has raised some criticism is that there was a concerted effort to get the vaccine into Black and Brown neighborhoods, economically distressed neighborhoods which have a history of not having the same accessibility to health services as some of the more affluent areas. And so people on the northwest side and on the north side were complaining that we don't have vaccines available in our neighborhoods. And maybe that's one of the reasons why our numbers are up. So we'll see how that plays out over time.
And before we move on from this topic, Heather, is that still the case? Or are they doing a much better job of getting this out to Black and Brown communities?
They certainly are making progress, but I don't think any city officials would declare mission accomplished or the job is done. Chicago is also lagging behind the state in what many people consider the most important metric of vaccine rollout, in that fewer seniors in Chicago have been vaccinated than statewide. Now, statewide, it's about 70% of all people over 65 have been vaccinated. But in Chicago, it's not even close to 60%. And I think that shows you that supply, part of that supply imbalance. And it could, of course, be some vaccine hesitancy among Black and Latino Chicagoans, who, of course, have a long and terrible history of being mistreated by the healthcare system. system. But that's a real area of concern because, as we all know, if you're older and you get COVID, you are much more likely to get very sick or die. So that is something that I know city officials are very worried about. As eligibility expands in the city, as it did on March 29th, that means that there will be more people trying for those appointments, and perhaps less tech-savvy seniors will continue to get locked out of that race online. So that is another area of concern in the city.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Heather Sharon with Chicago Tonight. Hannah, it's not surprising when it comes to politicians, they want to get reelected. They want to know exactly what they're going to be facing and what they're up against, and they all want to know what their districts will look like. And every 10 years, this big census comes along, and we figure out what the legislative boundaries look like for both House and Senate districts. Not surprisingly, there is a lot of disagreement over redistricting in Illinois this year between Democrats and Republicans. Fill us in where things stand at this point.
That's right. About a week ago, 2 weeks ago, the redistricting committees that were formed, you know, appointed by the legislative leaders in both the House and Senate, had the first couple of meetings. Now the House is scheduled for something like 24 meetings over the next month or so, including one, you know, tomorrow on a Saturday, which I find interesting. We'll see if people actually decide to. But yeah, I mean, the redistricting happens obviously every 10 years after a census, but the last census was very weird, very wonky. Not only did we have, you know, COVID disrupt a lot of, you know, the census taking, but we also had, you know, the Trump administration, as far back as 2018, it tried and put that question on the census of citizenship. Ultimately, that question was left off, but, you know, that left a lot of fear, especially among the Latino and other immigrant communities, about actually filling out the census, and that fear persisted. And so we have that. And so the Census Bureau says that they're not going to get official census data to the states until September, although now we know we'll get unofficial, which is basically the thing, in late August. So we'll have at least a month or so of leeway. But however, both of those dates are far beyond the June 30th deadline laid out in the state constitution for lawmakers to actually pass their own maps. You know, of course, in the 50 years that we've had this state constitution, four out of the five times we've gone beyond that June 30th deadline. And what happens is an independent kind of commission is set up, and, you know, it's supposed to agree on maps. Of course, that hasn't happened. So what happens? The Secretary of State, I'm laughing because it is just so ridiculous when you say it out loud. The Secretary of State picks a random, you know, name out of, I guess, a hat that the Supreme Court puts forward, two names of people who are, you know, ostensibly a Democrat and a Republican, and three out of the four times this is how Democrats have, you know, by random chance, kind of won the advantage there. Democrats this year say that they don't want to do that. They want to use this American Community Survey data, which they say is basically as accurate as census data. The most recent data from 2019 is what they want to use. And they want to go forward with the process as laid out in the Constitution and not miss that June 30th deadline. Because, you know, they don't want to leave their partisan advantage up to chance. And Republicans point out that, like, why did Democrats push get out the census effort, saying that it was, you know, to make sure that your communities are accurately represented in Congress and the State House in Springfield. And so Republicans are pushing back and saying, you know, we want this independent commission. If you remember back in 2016, it got close, but the Illinois Supreme Court shut down this constitutional amendment going on the ballot, asking for kind of an independent commission like this. And it's not just Republicans who want this. It's plenty of, you know, kind of reform-minded, progressive liberals who have been pushing this too.
Yeah, Charlie, you've covered this, I guess, as Hannah mentioned, all the time since the new constitution came in. You've been following redistricting. It's one of those things that not on everybody's mind until it rolls around every 10 years, but what do you make of the current situation for this year?
What's likely to happen is that the Democrats are going to press forward. They will put together a map and they'll present it to the governor, and the governor ultimately will sign it, and he will say that this is a fair map, because in the comments, the stress that Democrats are placing on fairness is not giving Republicans an equal chance. It's on making sure that minority communities are represented, that they have the opportunity to elect a lawmaker of their choosing. And so there'll be a lot of attention being paid to try and maximize the number of Black districts, maximize the number of Latino districts, maximize Asian American districts, to try and give a seat at the table to people who've not been represented in the past. And I think the notion that, well, we have to do it with the official census numbers, the Constitution doesn't say that. The Constitution just says in the year after a federal census, you have to draw new maps. It doesn't say that you can't use the census numbers from 40 years ago. And so the estimates that the Democrats are likely to use are going to be pretty close to the final product. Plus, there's been some speculation among Democratic operatives that how reliable are the numbers we get from the Census Bureau going to be, considering the impact that former President Trump had on trying to not count people who are not here with proper documentation and other things that called into question how accurate will these numbers be. And if you think about it, we know for a fact that whatever numbers come out from the Census Bureau do not represent what the case is at the moment. They're a snapshot in time going back to, well, basically a year ago. And the one thing we know for sure is that whatever the numbers say, for example, for the population of Springfield, that's not what the population is today. So I think the Democrats will make the case that we've done our due diligence. We're using the best numbers we have. We want to meet the constitutional deadline, and we want to make sure that underserved communities have a seat at a table and the opportunity to elect someone to represent their interests in Springfield. And as I say, Republicans are not going to be very high on the Democrats' list of concern.
Well, just a couple of minutes left here, and I did want to mention there is a piece of legislation that's on the governor's desk. It's getting a lot of attention, especially in the Chicago area. It involves the Chicago Teachers Union. And Heather, what is this all about, and why is it so controversial?
Well, if you can cast your memory all the way back to the mid-90s, the state, the General Assembly and the governor changed the way that the Chicago schools operated. They gave then Mayor Richard M. Daley control of the school district. And as part of that package, they also really limited the Chicago Teachers Union ability to strike. And they reduced the number of reasons that they could strike. And this was after a series of very long and very fraught strikes, and that was really designed to bring labor peace to Chicago. And what the bill that's sitting on the governor's desk right now would do is basically restore those rights. So it would allow the Chicago Teachers Union to strike over a whole bunch of issues that it is now prohibited from doing, including specific working conditions like class sizes. And this has been a priority for the Chicago Teachers Union for really the second it was signed in the mid-90s. So it would really change the relationship between the Chicago Teachers Union and the mayor of Chicago and give the teachers union significantly more flexibility in bargaining for changes to their work environment and basically how they do their jobs. So everybody is watching to see what the governor does. It has been on his desk for nearly 60 days. Sunday is the deadline. So we are all waiting to see what he decides to do with that. The mayor campaigned against it when it was working its way through the General Assembly during the veto session. So he is going to either make an enemy of Mayor Lori Lightfoot or an enemy of the very powerful Chicago Teachers Union. So the governor, I imagine, believes to be himself in a between a rock and a hard place, and we will all be watching to see how he manages to navigate that.
It also impacts the Chicago firefighters' pensions.
Well, that's a separate bill.
Okay.
And that bill would basically change the way that the cost of living increase is calculated for firefighters who draw their pension. And the mayor sent a letter late Thursday night to aldermen urging them to contact the governor and say, please veto this bill because it will blow a hole in our budget and we will have no choice but to raise property taxes even further. So that is also putting quite a bit of tension between the mayor and the governor.
All right, let's go to our notes from the field. And Hannah, let's start with you.
Well, on the Illinois corruption beat, we had two revelations this week. Former lawmaker Annazette Collins, who since 2013 has been a registered lobbyist in Springfield, was charged with 5 counts of tax evasion related to her lobbying business. Her lawyer claims that she's innocent and that the feds are trying to just use her to get to Mike Madigan because she had lobbied for ComEd, but and had, you know, served in the House under him as House Speaker for so many years. But he says that she's got nothing for the feds. And then also longtime Republican Congressman Ray LaHood, who served as Transportation Secretary under Barack Obama, it was revealed that California prosecutors in 2019 had come to an agreement with him for him to pay a $40,000 fine for allegedly accepting a $50,000 loan from a foreign national, which is completely illegal.
All right. And Heather?
Well, today, April 2nd, is the second anniversary of Mayor Lori Lightfoot's election as Chicago mayor, and she is facing criticism and problems as far as the eye can see. Not only is she at loggerheads with the governor on several pieces of legislation, she also faces a restive city council, which is frustrated by the way that she spent the first federal relief package. There's going to be a massive fight over how the city spends the coming $1.9 billion from the American Rescue Plan signed by President Joe Biden. And she's also under increasing pressure to propose or support a plan that would put an elected board in charge of the Chicago Police Department, which of course is woefully behind on efforts to reform itself under a federal court order that stems, of course, from the police killing of Laquan McDonald. And so she is under fire from all sides, and you have to wonder if she knew 2 years ago what she was gonna get, she was getting herself into, whether she would have been quite so jubilant that night at the Chicago Hilton and Towers.
And Charlie?
Well, the University of Illinois Flash Index came out, and Professor Gerrits is reporting that the index is showing marked strength, and it's at 97.8, up from its 96.6 level in February. And it's been going up steadily since bottoming out roughly a year ago. And part of it, the professor pointed out, was because the numbers from last year that are part of the calculation, last March was the first month when the impact of the virus started to be felt. So the comparison is with a bad month, if you will, but also there's a combination of continued federal spending and the increasing availability of the vaccine help to explain other aspects of the recovery, he says. Unlike many recessions, he says, this recovery is marked by strong pent-up demand accompanied by substantial savings.
All right, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Heather Sharone with Chicago Tonight. Get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org or through the NPR One app. And don't forget to join us next time. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.